Shalom and welcome to On the House, the podcast where industry experts and professionals discuss real estate in Israel. I'm your host, Debbie Goldfischer, real estate agent, founder and editor-in-chief of buyitinisrael.com. Join us as we explore market trends, legal and tax issues, purchasing tips, neighborhoods throughout Israel, and much more. All this is On the House, helping you make the right move. Welcome back to On the House. Thank you everyone for joining us. I'm thrilled to present the fourth episode of our sixth season, where we continue our deep dive into mortgages in Israel. So far this season, we've covered a wide range of topics. We've spoken about the various mortgage tracks and rates available, how to customize, strategize, and select the right tracks, the application process and eligibility criteria, the costs associated with mortgages, working with mortgage brokers, refinancing, early repayments, and penalties. And remember, next week will be our final season on this topic, where we'll address all the questions and issues raised by you, our listeners. Don't forget to send in your comments and questions through the Buy It in Israel website or email us at office@buyitinisrael.com. I'm especially excited about today's guest, not only because I know him from the motherland, yes, from England, but because this episode is a little bit different. Up until now, most of our guests have been service providers, brokers, agents, consultants, and salespeople. But today, I'm honored to bring you a senior expert straight from the banking industry. It's quite rare to find a native English speaker in such a prominent role in an Israeli bank, so I'm thrilled to welcome Mark Rees, Deputy Managing Director of Private Banking at United Mizrahi Tfachot Bank. Mark has an extraordinary career spanning global finance and private banking. He began his journey at Bank Paribas in London, quickly establishing himself as a leader in international banking. Mark went on to found Citibank Israel, where he played a pivotal role in setting up its international personal banking division, catering to the needs of high net worth clients worldwide. Later, he served as the head of Citi Wealth Management Sales and Distribution for Western Europe, overseeing strategic growth and wealth services for clients across the region. Mark has continued to excel in Israel, first as head of private banking and now leading the foreign resident and Olim segment at Mizrahi Tfachot Bank, where he leverages his global expertise to provide tailored financial solutions for international clients navigating the Israeli banking system. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. It's such an honor to have you.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
My pleasure. You know, I've never actually mentioned this on my podcast, but I actually started off in banks as well. I worked in Barclays Bank in the UK. And then after I married my husband, moved to America, worked for Salomon Smith Barney, and it was taken over by Citibank while I was there.
So we might have met because I was there several times visiting Salomon Smith Barney.
We met in Israel in Citibank.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It was a long time ago. I was looking for a job, actually.
Oh, okay. I was actually part of that team because, you know, we believe in a lot of these success transfer and best practice. I remember when we had connections with Salomon Smith Barney, I was in Connecticut. And I went to one of their sales training centers and saw how they did things, and we implemented things back here. It was a lot of fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So before we dive into the specifics of our topic today, tell us a little bit about yourself. You've had an incredible career in banking with extensive global experience, from your early roles in London to leadership positions managing international wealth across Europe, and now leading foreign resident Olim segment at Mizrahi Tfachot. What do you see as the biggest differences between working in banking in Israel versus other countries?
What would be the difference between working with the international banks and the banks in Israel? Well, in some ways, there's no difference in terms of the professionalism. The banks in Israel are super professional. Many people underestimate, actually, that they feel like, it's not something that I would have been familiar with or used to. It's a different environment. It's a different culture. It can't be the same as it would have been in the States or
third world country.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, even though we both know it isn't like that at all.
From it.
And yet, you can actually do. you can actually do a lot more in a branch here in Israel than you can do in a branch of a local bank in the UK, for example.
What do you mean?
No, there's just things you can do. There's a lot more access. There's a lot more tellers still here today. There's a lot more, you know, there's people sitting there. A lot of places around the world have become much more digital, and they're shutting branches. In Israel, there's plenty of branches in plenty of areas. And it's nice to see that. In fact, when you walk into a bank here, it's not uncommon to see the same people at the smachot, at the weddings and bar mitzvahs of clients. They invite their bankers. They become really part and parcel of their lives, which in many ways just reinforces what I've always believed, that a bank is not really a product, it's a service. And if you perform that service well and you really, really understand the person sitting opposite you, which is really what it's all about, because otherwise how can we even claim the privilege of trying to help people if we don't understand what it is that they really need? And if you do that successfully, then you do end up going to the smachot of the people that you are serving.
So lovely.
So that would be a major difference between working from abroad as well to here. The banks are very much more intimate. Also, for our particular segment, this is not a hobby. You know, our core segment are people who live in Israel, looking to set up in Israel. Obviously, from the Israeli side as well, there's very many people here who want to have some exposure abroad as well. You know, we're able to do all of that. But you're doing it with a full understanding that we can not sympathize with the people that we're working with, we can empathize with them because we are them. So when we're talking about the Jewish community, or even, for example, like you and I from the UK, if there's someone who has made Aliyah here from London, for example, within 10 seconds they realize they're speaking to people, whether they speak to me or someone in the branch, that they're speaking to someone who really can empathize with them because they've done the same thing. And therefore they feel that whatever it is that they need, it's coming from a place where he really understands and can even help me understand further what I want.
Sure.
That's another thing. Also, we have certain products and services here which are slightly different to abroad. Like, I'm sure we'll get onto this a bit later, for a mortgage, for example. There are certain requirements here that we would want a life insurance policy as well, especially if someone's buying from abroad. We want a life insurance policy. And that's not necessarily so common abroad as well. Remember, we have the pledge on the house and we have various other pledges too. But all you need to do is see once, you know, a widow or a widower, yeah, who comes and thanks you for the fact that you made them or asked them or encouraged them to take a life insurance policy. And when they find themselves alone, yeah, after a traumatic event, that they don't fear for their house and they don't fear for any extra worries that they might have in the predicament that they find themselves because they were taking a life insurance policy. When you see that, you realize how important it is. And that's also a big difference. We try and match the products for the segment and for the segment need for us here. Mm. And therefore, there's a nice intimacy about it, which I didn't really see in the banks abroad.
Love that. Before we talk about mortgages, let's talk about foreign buyers or foreign residents opening a bank account in Israel. Why is it important to do so?
Okay. Remember, I'm assuming that a large part of your segment are people that already live here in any case.
We have English speakers living here and then people from all over the world who are looking to either buy here or to move here in the future.
Yeah. So, and again, I'm sure we'll get onto that too, as to what the trend is there and indeed are so many people coming here, which we see that they are.
We're going to talk about that for sure.
And but the truth is the Anglo-Saxon community, and not just the Anglo-Saxon community, the French community, the South American community, already living here. Most people don't buy properties when they come. They spend a few years, they rent, they want to understand where they are first before they decide where to go. So, you know, I'll be addressing all of these too. First of all, a bank account in Israel is probably one of the most significant professional relationships that someone will have with after their aliyah. It really is.
You can't do anything without a bank account.
You can't do anything without a bank account. You can't receive a wage. You can't pay somebody else.
Can't pay bills.
You can't pay bills. You can't accept the various benefits that come with making aliyah to Israel, whether
and you
it's
can't
the Sal Klita, things like that.
Can't get a credit card.
You can't get a credit card. We'll talk about the cards after, because in Israel there actually is no such thing as a credit card. They're all deferred debit cards, which comes with their own pros and cons, and I'll talk to you about that after. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you need a bank account for absolutely everything. And when someone buys a property, they're not just buying a property, they're beginning their relationship here. So if they live here, you'll either rent it out or be living in it and have to pay bills. You'll just need a bank account. And even if you're not yet here, you'll need the account because you're suddenly going to have to pay rates or arnona or the various taxes and the property issues. You're just going to have to do that. So you need an account for everything. At the same time, you might very well have, you yourself will be here, but your family might be living abroad, or the opposite. You might be living in Israel and you have elderly parents abroad or children who are now living already in Israel, but you're not here yet. So you'll want to support people from abroad to Israel. And therefore, it's always easier to have a local account here. And also when you come on holiday, if you come on holiday and you're using your foreign credit card, for example, it's much more expensive when it comes to the foreign exchange, and it's much more expensive to come and pay bills using the various means of payment from abroad. If you have something local and you have an interest, it's always always useful to have a bank account here.
So interesting. And of course, to pay mortgage as well, you need a bank account.
No, of course. When you take a mortgage, you will need a bank account here.
So it's interesting because I've heard banks are reluctant to open bank accounts for foreign residents. So tell us a bit about what the process is like.
Well, two things there. It's not just Israeli banks who are reluctant to open up for foreign residents. I remember even already from around 15 years ago walking through the streets of London, and I would see, whether it was down the Strand or in various areas in the city of London, and you will see signs on the doors there saying, you know, we no longer open accounts for American residents or American citizens or for foreign residents. And the process has become rather cumbersome for foreign residents to open up. If you tomorrow moved or wanted to buy a property in, I don't know, as many people do, whether it's in Greece or in Germany or whatever it is that might want to, it's not simple at all to open up an account there as a foreign resident. And Israel is part of the developed world, and therefore we have the same obligations to report, whether it's for FATCA, whether it's the CRS, whether it's all the global reporting systems, and this is how it should be in a modern society. And therefore it's cumbersome for banks to take on these obligations. And when it's now, the various local regulatory authorities, we are not allowed to refuse any Israeli, for example, to open an account. Someone that wants to open an account in Israel will have to show that there is a reason for them to open an account. They can't just come and park money here for no reason. They either want to settle down, or they're looking to lay the groundwork for the future, or they have children here or parents here, or they're buying a property here. Well, that's what I mean by settling down for the future, or they're laying the groundwork. They'll buy a property here. And those are reasons enough to open. The compliance demands on an account with zero shekels and with a million shekels in are exactly the same. And if a foreign resident, for example, wants to come here and open up an account, and it's just going to be as a student, or it's just going to be for something which really has no long-term ties to the country, then yeah, some banks would be reluctant to do that, because it's cumbersome also for the person who wants to open the account. These things come with expenses, and therefore there should be a reason to open an account in Israel.
Okay, so once somebody decides they want to open an account and the bank have agreed that they can, what's the process? What documents do they need?
It's very simple, really very simple. It's all about identifying that person. If someone comes after making Aliyah and they have a Tudat Zehut, that's pretty much all you need. You bring in the Tudat Zehut and you have the Sefach, which shows the address.
And the ID and the appendix with it to show
where you live. That's right, you open up an account.
A foreign resident
doesn't have a Tudat Zehut. So what they will have to show is the passport, from where they live. You generally need another means of identification with a picture on it. So it's more likely that they'll have a driving license. So a driving license, which can also show the picture with an address as well. The passports tend not to have an address.
Sure.
And also a tax number, whether it's a social security number in the United States or the various numbers that, whether it's wherever they come from, that are relevant for that. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it. So once you have that, then you walk into a branch. They would always have to be done face-to-face in a branch. There are some possibilities to take power of attorney if someone can't make it here and they're buying a property, for example. A lawyer can take power of attorney and they can do that for the client too.
They can't do it online?
No, not yet. You can't do it online. And there's various various regulations which restrict that.
I'm assuming that if people are transferring money into the account, in particular from abroad, there are going to be some strict regulations on anti-money laundering and that sort of thing.
Yeah. These regulations are pretty much global, whether it's from here sending money to abroad, which obviously as a small country where people do business abroad, many people will be doing so. Mm-hmm. And for the people who are sending money into Israel, whether it's to buy a property, which will be large funds, or whether it's just, you know, helping children or parents out, as we said before, small amounts coming in. Yeah, the bottom line is the bank needs to know that the money is basically, they need to know what the source of funds were. In other words, everything changed basically since 9/11, many a couple of decades ago. Whether it's to make sure, and we're not talking about the average person, you know, living in a small community on a salaried wage. You know, these aren't the things which necessarily worry the banks, and the laws didn't change because of that. The laws changed because banks have to make sure that there are people not exploiting the system and putting money into the system, which has come funding terrorist activities or various other nefarious activities. And therefore, there's strict regulations, global regulations, that the banks will have to check. They'll have to be comfortable with the source of funds, and they'll have to be comfortable that taxes have been paid on those funds. And they'll want to see documentation on this. So, for example, if someone wants to transfer, I don't know, $500,000 because he wants to buy a property here in Israel, and he said this is from a sale of a property abroad, then yeah, the bank would like to see a contract where, just to show that this is indeed the case. Mm-hmm. If someone is just savings over their lifetime, then the bank would like to see statements for the last several years, just to see, well, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And these are the type of things that the bank will demand. The issues really are not when people send money from their personal account, from where they come from, to a personal account here in Israel. These are pretty simple. Where it gets more complicated is if someone sends from more complex structures, like they have a company and it's owned by several people and they're one owner, or there's a trust involved or an offshore entity involved. And here they get more complex, but the bank will want to understand who the ultimate beneficiaries are. What is the reason? Does it make sense? Have taxes been paid everywhere? And yes, these are significant. On top of the documentation, if it's complex enough, the bank will need a signed statement from an accountant or a lawyer saying, yeah, this makes sense to them. They know the customer, they know what they've been doing, and they can confirm that everything that they said makes sense and that the money where it's coming from has been reported accordingly and has been earned accordingly. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, makes sense. And I'm interested to know what if somebody opens an account as a foreign resident when they decide to move here, make Aliyah, can that account then become their current account, their regular account, or do they have to open another one?
No. So first of all, an account is an account. Yeah, it doesn't matter your status. It's the same account. There's no real difference.
I see.
The difference is, of course, is in the person as to their status. And your question is actually a good one. Yeah, I can open an account as a foreign resident, and if in 6 months' time I'm actually moving here, so you had to buy the property first or whatever it is, so you have the account. Yeah, it will then, once you have changed your status, you have a Tudat Zuhut, you have an ID number here, yeah, you'll go into the branch and you'll change it accordingly and it will become a local account.
Okay. I'm assuming for foreign account holders, there are different fees or costs?
No, not that I'm aware of. But there would be different services. So for example, and this is actually quite an interesting one. Some people think maybe, oh, it'll be different because it's a foreign resident. Well, Israelis, for example, won't be sending much foreign currency to Israel. Therefore, they won't be familiar with the fees there. It's not a different fee. They just won't be using it very much. They won't be familiar with it.
Sure.
It's important when it comes to fees that people compare apples with apples. So, for example, in Israel, if I want to send to your account shekels, you know, to receive shekels in your account, there's no fee for that. Not that I'm aware of in any case, because it's in the local currency. But if you want to send foreign currency into your account, there are certain fees that might be applicable.
Like a receiving fee.
That's right. Now, some people say, well, what's this? It's my money. I want to put it in my account. And it was not like that in the UK or in the States. Try sending euro to the States or dollars to a UK bank. So when people say there's no fees, it's because they're sending pounds to UK banks and dollars.
Talking about the conversion yet. We're talking about just receiving.
I'm not talking about the conversion. Sending money in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you're sending foreign currency, every bank around the world, the fees are elevated because the work is slightly elevated.
I see. So even if I'm sending pounds from my account in London to my account in Israel, just to receive those pounds, I'll incur a fee?
Yeah, they're minimal fees, but there would be a fee.
Okay, and then there are fees, obviously, for the conversion into shekels.
If you need to change into shekels. Remember, the banks in Israel, or the accounts in Israel, are multi-currency.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, someone can send... It's actually interesting you say that, because it's surprising when you get questions from clients who ask you things which are so obvious to us because we've been here for so many years, and you forget. So in the UK, yeah, it's true, you need a different account for different currencies, whereas in Israel, they're multi-currency accounts. So in the same account number, I can hold pounds, shekels, dollars, euro, anything.
Excellent. And then you can convert them when you choose to.
Exactly. And that really is up to the client. So if the client has a view, say, for example, he's buying a property, I don't know what, a few million shekels, and he has, I don't know, £1 million, which is worth exactly what he feels the property will be in a year's time. But if the pound or the shekel changes in the next year or 2 years' time,
which it will, exactly.
That he might have more or less than he needs to pay to buy his property. So he might want to hold the shekels now. Yeah, he might want to, or he believes that the uncertainty throughout the whole of Europe or the States or whatever it is such, you know, post-election, pre-election, Brexit, who knows, that they feel that their local home currency is undervalued. And they have a personal view that it's better still to hold on to their pounds because in 2 years' time, it will be worth more than 4.5 now. It might be worth 5.5. Mm. If that's the case, that's a 20-25% increase in the next 2 years. And they don't want to change to their shekels now.
Mm-hmm.
So they might want to hold their pounds. So it really is an individual decision for everyone's own specific needs.
Understood.
On the other hand, it is actually always useful to hold shekels in the bank in Israel because if you are going to change in drips and drabs, say you have, I don't know, £10,000 in your account, and every month you only need 4,000 shekels, so you change 1,000 pounds a month. Actually, the banks in Israel are fee-based, and therefore you'll pay per transaction, and therefore per transaction there might be minimum fees involved. And those are a shame. So instead of transferring £1,000 and then incurring a minimum fee, which would make it a high percentage relatively, it's probably better to change 5 months' worth of what your needs are and hold those shekels. Obviously, there are savings deposits and interests involved, and therefore you will make money on your shekels. But these are all individual decisions.
Sure. So it's obviously very important when you open an account to get a tariff, your fees are, and understand, you know, what you're going to be paying for what, so that you can make decisions like this based on...
Very much so. I would say the most important part of that, actually, is the relationship that you have with the person. You're speaking now to someone with an English accent who has been here now for many years.
You've maintained your strong British accent. Well, not like me.
Well, you're not doing too bad.
I'm married to an American.
If you go into a branch and you see there is someone, and there will be, certainly, for example, most banks who deal with foreign residents will have dedicated branches who to deal with foreign residents. And there's reasons for that. Like we'll have, say, 24, 25 branches that will deal with foreign residents because the compliance is more cumbersome, because the culture might be different, because people also are phoning up from different time zones. Therefore, we might have different hours as well, which can support that. And we'll try and support it as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they move to Israel, the culture sometimes doesn't change. The language needs might not change. My mother's been here for many years. She still prefers to speak in English. You know,
so do I.
Yeah, and me too, to be honest with you. Therefore, there is a reason for specific dedicated branches. Once you build that relationship, and the relationship is they're aware of all the particular needs, where what it is that you're holding abroad, what it is that you're doing now, then they might be able to help you focus on what is truly important. So, for example, if they see different transfers being brought into the bank at different times, they would probably suggest, you know, why don't you
consolidate
this? Yeah, mm-hmm. They would make suggestions,
mm-hmm.
and that's sometimes more important than the general tariff, which doesn't refer to anyone specifically. So the relationship is really, really important. I'm not responsible for just or for the private banking. I'm responsible for the segment for the new immigrants into Israel and those who are preparing to become new immigrants into Israel, the foreign residents,
right.
You know, and all that. So the branches I'm talking about are not private banking branches. They are regular branches. We do have for more private banking-based branches,
mm-hmm.
because there will be people who demand that type of service and are willing to pay a little bit more for a little bit more access, for a little bit more patience, a little bit more understanding. It really is that. But the bottom line service in the regular branches is not going to be a bad service. Yeah, so there will be, in the branches which are dedicated for the foreign residents, they're not going to be 100% dedicated. They will just have people within that branch that have been trained to be able to take care of language speakers.
Mm. Where are these branches? I mean, I live in Modi Inn. I don't know of a...
Branch in Modi Inn, they have been trained, and there are two or three people within that branch who have a focus or are able to deal with the foreign residents.
Excellent.
Who will be, because Modi Inn is a good example. There's a lot of foreign residents and a lot of people making aliyah to this particular...
I mean, I guess for me it's not relevant because I'm no longer a new immigrant and I'm not a foreign resident. But
it might be because you might still be holding money abroad, or you might still have a lot of connections abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, when all your parents might be abroad, you might have investments abroad or whatever it is. And we're not talking about you. People, when they move to Israel, don't necessarily move everything over at once.
Sure.
And often they're still working abroad. They live here and they travel once every week or 2 weeks and they manage their business or whatever it is abroad. So people with the understanding of that type of culture, we'll have one of those at least in every one of our regular branches that can deal with foreign residents. And that's important. So Modi Inn's a good example. Bet Shemesh would be a good example. Efrat would be a good example. Mm-hmm. Netanya, Ashdod. And all these places, obviously Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Haifa. But the point is that all of these places, when you walk in the street, you'll be hearing more and more and more French accents, English accents, American accents. And therefore, all the places where we would have such branches would be intuitive from your perspective too. You would expect that because mm-hmm. that's where there'll be large population centers of new immigrants.
Mm-hmm. So something that you've mentioned a few times is people that are moving here. I see many people who are not moving here yet. They're looking to buy something. And I believe and I hope that for them it'll be an anchor. And eventually, please God, they will come home. The children will come home. But I've heard many, many people over the last 6 months say, I want to get my money out of Europe. I want to get my money out of America. And those sorts of people, can they open an account and just start moving money over?
There will always have to be a good reason for that. Yeah, the answer to that
is anti-Semitism and their fear of them losing their money.
So these are legitimate reasons, But I'm going to assume here that most of these people are actually looking to buy a property here in order to, if they're feeling that way, they will want to move to Israel at some stage in any case. Or they might very well have children here already.
Correct.
Yeah. And therefore, that would be reason enough that they would want to do that. Yes, and of course they can. You know, the Israeli banks, as I said, there are multi-currency accounts here. I'll give you a good example, actually, where there is an intimacy here, because and dealing with this segment is not a hobby. We are not one of the global, brand names who insist on offshore banking and whether it's the Swiss banks or the along those lines. And basically, they'll put salespeople in certain areas. But if you have a complaint or you're not feeling comfortable at why did you pay this much for this, and you'll find there's no one to speak to often, actually, even for the very wealthy clients. Mm-hmm. No, here it's not. Here it's a core business for us. What are the practical implications of that? None of us know what the future holds. And so we don't know exactly how best and to hold our money. Now, in today's environment where interest rates are reasonably high, that's one thing. Not too long ago, interest rates were very low. And for people to hold their money, they would have to get interest on it. They would have to put it in deposits for several years, 4 years, 5 years. Mm-hmm. In Israel, and I think this pretty much reflects most of the Jewish segment around the world, we don't know what will be tomorrow. So people don't want to close their money for more than 3 months, 6 months, a year. And not just because of they want to buy a property in 3 months, because they might decide they want to move to Israel quicker, or they might have an opportunity. Something came up that they want to react to. This is not uncommon in our segment. It's not uncommon through our history.
Sure.
Almost every single deposit, in the Israeli banking system, certainly in our bank, it will come along with tachanot yetziot, early redemption, exit points. Yeah. And this is critical. And this is based on an understanding of what the segment needs.
So interesting.
I'll give you another example too. We're living in an area, and certainly in an environment now. Last night, the capital markets, they fell in the United States. Why? Because there was more of a hawkish tone, as to whether interest rates will go down quicker or slower. And as a result, people don't know whether they should be putting things now in fixed or variable, or whether they should be linked to inflation or not. Often here, you can get deposits which give you the best of. In other words, you put a certain amount of money and you don't know what will be, so you get the best of linked to this or a fixed rate over a period of time. And that is all part of understanding the segment, where they know that there's going to be changes afoot. They don't know when. They know they want to buy something. They're not quite sure when. They know they want to invest in or start a new business, and they're not quite sure what it will be or exactly when to. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we cater for that. And that's something I'm quite proud of, actually.
Okay, great. So now I want to pivot and get into our topic of mortgages, which is the season that we're in right now. But what we've spoken about until now, it's been super important, because opening an account is part of that, and we have to understand the culture behind it. Before we go on to mortgages, you mentioned credit cards a little bit earlier. Tell us what the relevance is to foreign buyers.
It's not just for foreign buyers. It's pretty much for everyone that's not familiar with the Israeli banking system. There are certain things which are I suppose, unique here. I recall growing up in London that whenever we would get a credit card bill, you could decide how much to write on your check and send it to the credit provider, and it would be written there, minimum payment by this date. And then basically you pay off your credit card in your own time. Here, everything, and you asked the question at the beginning, what's the importance of a bank account? Everything is attached to your bank account. So the credit cards here are actually linked to your bank account. And in fact, for most of the purchases, there's no interest involved, because they are simply deferred debit cards. So whether you're buying something, furniture from a furniture shop, or a monthly supermarket bill, or whatever it is, they'll even ask you, would you like to pay this in payments? Those payments are interest-free payments, and they will come off your account on a monthly basis, and they're simply deferred debit. Now, we call them credit cards because, to all intents and purposes, it's the same use and function as anyone else abroad. But they're deferred debit cards. There are some points of sale, and these aren't the banks, that will offer additional credit or ISRA credit. Then they'll tell you if you want, perhaps more payments or things that are in addition, if the payment schedule that the supermarket said you up to four payments. If someone wants to do a little more than that, then there might be some points of sale that offer private credit for that. But that's not via the banks. So the credit cards are, in fact, deferred debit cards. So they're interest-free. But they're also with those you withdraw money from your account. So anyone that's coming from abroad, if they don't want to queue up in the bank and they're coming on holiday for Pesach, for example, they want to pay the hotel bill with that.
Mm-hmm.
Or they want to withdraw cash to pay tips, or they want to withdraw cash to go to the cinema, whatever it is, you need those cards. It's the same card. So the deferred debit cards, and there's no interest on those payments. That's a big difference from abroad. You can also obviously use them abroad. So for example, if you have one here, but those do incur certain fees because there's the foreign exchange fees.
Sure.
So if you're using, unless you're holding pounds and sure. you're in London, then it will take the pounds. But if you're holding shekels and you're spending dollars mm-hmm. in another country, then there will be standard fees. For those that come with various cultural, affiliations, there's such a wide variety of these type of cards here. It's another, actually, reason to get to know your banker well. You can get El Al miles on certain cards here. They're useful for people that travel. You also get cash back on certain. They're useful for people who really are like on a tight budget and they prefer any benefits that come with the card to be translated into cash and they want that cash back. There are others who are very into culture. So there will be credit cards which are linked to the various cultural events and mm-hmm. philharmonic orchestras and things like that, that whenever you mm-hmm. go and see one of these things, you'll get discount mm-hmm. From there. The various archaeological sites around Israel, there are certain cards linked to them that you get various benefits when you go and see them. So it's interesting, the amounts and the benefits that come along with these things, and the banker will help you with all of that.
Okay. Let's go, let's talk about mortgages now. So as I mentioned at the beginning, we've pretty much covered, I think, how mortgages work, what the options are, the processes, the costs, etc. I want to talk to you as somebody who comes from the banking industry about the interest rates. So are mortgage rates for foreigners different for those from Israelis? Do they pay the same rates? Are there any...
Again, to the best of my knowledge, there is no different, because we are an Israeli bank in every sense. There is no difference in product, from a foreign resident to a local person. You can have difference between rates within a local population. It's all risk-based, for example. It's all based on the ability to repay and on the circumstances involved. Mm-hmm.
So now that we're talking about interest rates, I'm interested to know where you think these rates are headed. And of course, what impact this will have on the housing market.
Yeah, it's funny. I say this a lot, but there's only two types of analysts that I know. There's the analysts that don't know what's going to happen, and there's analysts that don't know they don't know what's going to happen. So when it comes to interest rates, no one really knows what's going to happen, but we do have certain signs. We mentioned this before. Last night, the stock market in the States crashed. Why? Because there was a more hawkish statement saying mm-hmm. that we might not reduce rates as quickly as we thought we would. And therefore, it does seem that interest rates will stay relatively high for the foreseeable future. But they certainly seem to be on a downward trend, but maybe not as quick as people think. So, we went through a period several years back where interest rates were at historical lows. Now they're at sort of more longer-term, normal levels. They are going to be going down at some stage. But with all of these things, to be honest with you, that's the purpose of variable rates. And that's also the purpose of fixed rates. If you are, and it's difficult to time these things. When it comes to a mortgage, if you're taking a fixed rate mortgage, and the Bank of Israel does demand that there are a third fixed and two-thirds form of variable, they are really in order to make sure that the customer doesn't take on too much. So if rates go down and you're on a variable rate mortgage, great, your payments will be less. If rates go up and you're on a fixed rate mortgage, great, because you fixed it. But if rates go up and you're on a variable rate mortgage, then you'll be paying more. And that's the reason why the Bank of Israel takes a serious interest in making sure that the customers here are not taking on too much debt that they can't afford. And the same would apply whether it's whether it's a regulatory authority saying it or whether it's the banker saying it when they deal with foreign residents abroad. The ability to repay is critical. The Bank of Israel does one have a directive, which is, I suppose, relevant to non-residents in terms of the ability to repay, which affects your global income. So up to 40%, I think it's 37%, but it's up to 40% of your global income is the maximum that you can pay for a mortgage. And the thing about that statistic that some people don't realize is that that's what defines the amount you can afford to pay or your budget for your property in Israel. And not many people make that connection.
Well, I emphasize all the time that before you go shopping, you have to know what your budget is, and you should meet with somebody who can advise you on your mortgage, whether it's a broker or the bank directly, to figure out your budget.
But I want to make that point slightly more clear. You might have $10 million worth of property abroad, but if your income is less, in other words, if you're asset rich and cash poor, the bank can only give you a mortgage based on the global income. It doesn't have to be a wage. It can also be a wage, dividends, investments, pension, you
name it. Rental income.
Rental income, everything. But it'll be 40%. So at the end of it, if you can get a 50% mortgage and you're only being able to take, say, the bank can only, it will limit you to pay 40% of what you're earning. So let's just make it simple. You're earning $10,000 a month. You can only pay $4,000 a month for a mortgage. That means you can only take a certain level of mortgage. And at 50%, that means your budget for that house is limited, if you know what I mean. Unless you want to put in much more owner's equity, much more money of your own there first.
So but that 50% that you can borrow, you're maxed out at a certain amount, and they won't lend you more than that.
Yeah, that's for sure. And there is a specific difference between foreign residents, but not foreign residents and Israelis, but it's a specific difference between those who are Israeli with a Tudat Zehut and those who are foreign residents. Israelis have a concession for their first property in Israel. Yeah, they can get a mortgage up to 75%. But for anyone that doesn't have a Tudat Zehut, including foreign residents, for example, will be limited to 50% loan to value. So in that way, there is a specific product for a foreign resident, but it's more of a regulatory authority directive.
I'm interested to hear, Mark, you work so closely with foreign residents in Olim. Have you seen an increase in demand for people looking for mortgages, for making Aliyah since October 7th over the last year and a few months? What are you seeing?
First of all, the answer is an unqualified yes. There is a significant demand, and it has been it has increased as far as I can see since October the 7th.
You feel it?
Yeah, very much so, and it's very much counterintuitive because you know what we have been experiencing. We spoke about this personally before. You know, whether we have children or family, you know, who are fighting for this country at this moment in time. You know, it is a war zone to a large extent, and yet the shekel has strengthened against foreign currency, certainly the dollar in the last 3-4 months. And now people are looking to come to Israel. And yet it is the Middle East, and it is relative a war zone compared to growing up in the States or growing up in the UK. But there are reasons for that. It's not just because people are worried about abroad or because the various anti-Semitic incidents which we're seeing more prevalent, whether it's through university campuses or whether it's just simply being overtly Jewish or even overtly Israeli on the streets of Western societies these days. I don't think this is the real reason why people are now looking to come. It helps because, or it helps them with their decision. But this has pretty much been our history for many, many, many centuries in any case. And we're a stubborn and strong people.
Resilient.
And very resilient in that way. But on the other hand, you have a country here which is over a $2 trillion or 2 trillion shekel economy, where from a GDP absolute or measurement, we're probably number 18 or 19 out of around 220 countries.
Unbelievable.
But from a GDP perspective per capita, we're number 13, depending which measurement you look, but the IMF in the world. The economy here is hot. The career paths for people that move to Israel these days, whether it's the high tech or whether it's in many other fields, whether it's energy, clean energy, whether it's medicine, whether it's agricultural, you name it. There are career opportunities here which don't exist for many people in the societies where they find themselves for various reasons. And it's not so, so therefore it's not just people are being pushed out of where they're coming from. Israel's pulling them in.
Love that.
And that's very, very important. So for those reasons, we are seeing Yeah, a very much increased demand. If you speak to the Sochnut, my understanding is that we're talking about an increased opening of files for Aliyah of hundreds of percent. And you're seeing that whether it's in France or whether it's in the US. Doesn't mean they're all going to come, but it means that interest is certainly being elevated.
Certainly. And going back to your point about opportunities and careers, I can't emphasize this enough, that the youth, the young adults, the students, they're the ones who should be doing this, who should be looking towards Israel for their future. To me, it's so clear that their future is here. And the younger they come, the younger they acclimate, they study, they learn the language, they establish themselves in careers, the easier it will be. It only gets harder as you get older.
So it's interesting you say that about it only gets harder. I think maybe this is something which is not uncommon when we grow up, you know, in reasonably good lifestyles in the Western world. We sort of get this idea that life is supposed to be easy. And I think that's a mistake. It's not that it's not supposed to be easy, yeah, but it's supposed to be meaningful. There's obligations on us too. So in a way, when you grow up abroad and in certainly comfortable lifestyles, you can make the mistake of sticking your head in the sand and pretending that everything's good, and you forget that there are things which are meaningful, which are worth fighting for. We're seeing that now in our daily lives. You know, we were talking about this before as well.
Sure.
You know, we are seeing young people here, heroes in every sense of the word.
Absolutely.
Who are sacrificing their lives, sacrificing their, and often becoming severely injured. And you're seeing communities rally around, yeah, supporting in any and every way possible. And it's turning out that these young and brave people are inspiring us to be better people. And I strongly believe that this is one of the reasons why many people also want to come and move here.
Mm-hmm.
Because here we are not helpless. Here we are almost like a light unto the nations. We are fighting for what is right. And those people are, I believe, inspiring many of the younger generations abroad, and they want to be part of this. And that is the essence, actually.
They want to be part of history, not watching history.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
And that is the essence as to why they'll want to come here. And that actually leads us back to a certain extent to, you know, why are we having this discussion as a banker, yeah, with you here now? It's actually all connected, because we don't have the right to serve people to do whatever it is that they feel that they need to do in the country that they want to move to, unless you truly understand what keeps them awake at night, unless you fully understand what their circumstances are, what they believe in, what they fear, what is an attractive proposition to them, and what brings them meaning. And we spoke about this a little bit before. When you're dealing with, for example, a Swiss bank abroad, where it's very much product-based, yeah, and obviously we'll all have the same taglines, you know, and I mean, that's the essence of private banking. But I'll give you an example. You know, a couple of years ago, I got a call from someone. In fact, I got a call from three banks, yeah. I won't mention the names of the banks. They were all Swiss banks. And it was to get someone like me to open an account with them and put money with them. And they were pretty much exploiting the fact that Israel was going through some pretty challenging events, as we have been going over the last few years. You know, and people are looking to diversify their political and geographical risks, open an account abroad in Switzerland and put some money there. And that's how they try and sell themselves. And yet I would have, you know, whether it's children fighting for us here or family or close friends, they completely missed the point. They felt that they were understanding what my fear was and offering me something, which in fact was exactly the opposite of what I was thinking.
So funny, yep.
And that was their sales pitch to me.
They don't get it.
Yeah, and that's the purpose about working, from my perspective, with an Israeli bank, that we are you and we do understand the things. It doesn't mean we get it right all the time, by the way, but we'll certainly make the effort to understand. And from a segment perspective, this is not a hobby, and our products and our services, you will feel that intimacy, as I said from the beginning, and it's very important. Also, and it's connected to this, just to finish the story I was saying before, the three banks that they called, yeah, to offer me their services, it was the same person, one bank was going bust. It was bought by another bank. So he moved to that place. And then from there, when they cut down, he was then found himself then looking for another place and joined another one. And so three banks called, but it was pretty much the same person. Mm-hmm. And that highlighted to me the difference as well between the institution which wants to look after you rather than a person. Because the loyalty here, within, if you're here working with, certainly that's how it is, not just in the banking industry, I find it here with a lot in the economy, is that there's a loyalty here to the brands and there's a loyalty with the staff. We're not just getting people here, certainly that work for us, who are just, jumping from one place to another. We have people working for us for the last 45 years, mm-hmm. and they would be serving you for and your children pretty much throughout your whole life cycle. And that says and means a lot. And therefore, if someone's wants to start that type of a relationship and they know that they're going to be moving to Israel, the Israeli banks are very, 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 very good at that.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's great to hear. So you work at Mizrahi Tfachot, right? That's how it's called, Mizrahi Tfachot.
Tfachot is the mortgage side of the bank and Mizrahi was the retail side of the bank, mm-hmm. but then they joined together.
What would you say sets Mizrahi Tfachot apart for clients, whether they're English speakers living in Israel, Olim, people making Aliyah, or those abroad?
The banks are pretty much of a marginess here. The only difference, because it's pretty much the same service and the same type of dynamic that you will have.
Sure.
The only difference will be the people within the branch and how much do you care about that segment.
Well, that's huge.
Yeah. And it will be, I remember we used to use this old adage even in Citigroup many, many years ago, a bank is only as good as the person sitting opposite you. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether it's the biggest bank in the world or the smallest bank in the world. Obviously, there's various risks which will be involved if it's a tiny bank and you don't want it to go bust. But if you're talking about good, stable banks, it's only as good as the person sitting opposite you. Mm-hmm. If that person is good and he's accessible and he cares and he's managed to show you that he will be there to hold your hand and be the one point of contact that will help you navigate, because if you're not speaking, you're living in Israel, but Hebrew is not your mother tongue, and you don't know quite how to navigate via the call center or how the other various products on offer might work. If you have one point of contact in the branch and he's managed to give you, or she's managed to give you that feeling that that you can trust him or her, then that is where you should be banking. Mm-hmm. From my perspective, we staff our branches, certainly the ones that we've trained up to deal with this segment, the Olim Chadashim segment, the non-mother tongue Hebrew speaking segment. Yeah, we have put people in those branches which are able to empathize with their clients and not sympathize. Mm-hmm. Something I mentioned to you before as well, a sign that we very much care about this segment, is that it's not just about getting clients, we also try and get them jobs. So I participated with a couple of our staff in job fairs for the French-speaking immigrants and the English-speaking immigrants in the last 2 weeks, because that's also important. So when that feeling is that you genuinely care about the segment, if that gets through to the client, then that bank deserves your custom. Mm-hmm. I believe that's what we do. At the end of it, the customers will decide.
Sure. Am I correct that the Mizrahi Tfachot are the biggest mortgage bank in Israel?
They are, by far.
What percentage of mortgages would you say you hold?
I think this is Bank of Israel statistics. I think it's put it this way, at least one in three mortgages goes via Mizrahi Tfachot. But it's not because, they have some sort of captive market and all that. It's because year on year, they prove to the market that they have a well-oiled machine, that they know how to serve, that the products are relevant, that the service is superb, and that as a result, people come back. And all of these things are basically word of mouth as well. So if you have a happy customer, then he'll refer the next customer. That's how it pretty much works.
Mm-hmm. Do you have statistics for the percentage of foreign mortgages?
Again, these are all things that the Bank of Israel would measure. Okay. I'd rather stay away from those statistics because, some of them you can rely on and something not. But we have a pretty strong market share.
That's great. Okay. Interested to hear your perspective on the housing market and where you think it's going in the next 5 to 10 years.
It's funny, I'm not going to refer back to when I said no one really knows how to forecast things. But I'll tell you this much. Israel is a country the size of New Jersey, or if you come from where we come from, it's the size of Wales. There's around 15 to 16 million Jews around the world, yeah, of which 7.5 million, 7.8, something like that, live in Israel now.
I think the majority now live in Israel, they say.
No, we're the largest Jewish community now,
mm-hmm.
By far, but we're still not the majority of Jews. I think as a country we're nearing 10 million people, but the Jews in the country is about, I think it's 7.7, 7.8, 7.9, something like that. So there's more Jews abroad. That will change in the coming years, and that changes things. Sure. Remember, there's very many, you know, that's another reason people will come too. You know, even in my old days as an investment banker, you know, the trend is your friend. You know, you feel more comfortable when other people are doing it. And yeah, we will become the largest or the majority of Jews in the world at some stage, probably in the near to mid future. That combined with the fact that we are a tiny country, it's difficult to see demand for prices or demand for housing going down here, and that is what will define the prices here. So it's difficult to see a property or an environment where prices will be going down, especially actually for the Anglo-Saxon type areas, because they're in demand. So whether mm-hmm. it's in Jerusalem, whether it's in Beit Shemesh, whether it's in Modi'in, whether it's in Ranana, whether it's in Herzliya.
And we all follow each other.
It's true.
That's what
it's
happens.
Difficult to see that. I actually saw a map recently which imposed the map of Israel on various other countries. And you could see how tiny it was. And when you see that,
mm-hmm.
plus the demand in such a small area, it seems to me that there's never going to be a bad time to buy a property here in Israel.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But you also have to remember, most people here, if it's just a pure investment play, then that's maybe something that should preoccupy someone's mind. But I would say more often than not, it's not. It's people looking to lay the groundwork, whether it's for themselves or for their children or for their families. And therefore, it's much, much more than just trying to make money on buying a property. And if that's Absolutely. The case, you never want to let the tail wag the dog. Yeah, you want to know what it is that you're trying to do. And if it's really to set up something for the future, it's never a bad time to sit down and buy a property here.
Absolutely. In all my years working in this business, first of all, the first question they ask people is, what's the purpose of your purchase? I've never, ever had anyone say it's purely financial investment. I think if it was, they'd probably invest in other things. There's always an emotional attachment. There's a Zionist, drive. There's so many more factors than purely financial.
Very much so. And we mentioned this before, the environment that we're in today. Even people who felt less affiliated to Israel
mm-hmm.
have become more affiliated to Israel
sure.
because they're being reminded the whole time now abroad that they are, in fact, affiliated to Israel. You know, whether it's, in Australia now, you know, which is a sort of paradise, you know, the other side of the world, you know, to have people seemingly demonstrating against Israel, but always outside Jewish communities and outside synagogues. And we saw the horrendous events, you know, of even a synagogue being burned down, mm-hmm. you know, just a couple of weeks ago in Melbourne. When you're seeing that, it reminds people that everyone is in some way, if they don't feel it, they're reminded that they're affiliated to Israel. So yeah, it does raise more interest, and people are seeing now as to, you know, how that translates on the ground for them.
Sure. Mark, thank you so much. Your insights, your passion and your genuine concern for Jews, it's very clear. I really appreciate the time you've given us and your expertise. And before we wrap up, I have two final questions I love to ask my guests. First of all, where in Israel do you live and what made you choose that location?
I know you always ask that. I happen to live in Ranana. I'm not sure it was anything that made me choose that location. I know my wife loved the area, so that was very important and probably the reason to be there.
You're a smart man.
Yeah, but it's a wonderful area. Actually, there's lots of Anglo-Saxons there as well, but there's also a large Israeli community there as well. So it's very nice. It's very central, you know. So working in Tel Aviv, it's very easy to get there. But then again, Israel's so small, you know.
Right.
You can pretty much get there from anywhere, and it's just a pleasant place to live. There's probably a dozen similar beautiful, pleasant places to live in Israel. It just suits our needs.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And finally, if you could move anywhere else in the country, where would it be and why?
I don't know really that I consider moving anywhere else in the country. I mentioned to you first that when I go to places, when I visit the occasionally branches and areas where I used to visit as a young young student here in Israel, and I see smaller communities which are very tight and very supportive, those type of communities I find very attractive, but that's for a different time.
How lovely. Yeah. Mark, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it. Again, and to all of our listeners, thank you again for joining us for today's episode of On the House. Next week, we will be hosting the special Q&A session where we will answer all your questions about mortgages and financing a home in Israel. Remember to submit your questions through the Biden Israel website. Thank you for being here, and we'll see you next week on the House. Thank you for listening to On the House. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe and share it with your family and friends. You can also visit BuyItInIsrael.com, where you can find news, market updates, guidance, and much more on real estate in Israel. That's BuyItInIsrael, BuyItInIsrael.com. If you have a question or a specific topic you'd like us to cover on this podcast, please email us at the address you'll find at the bottom of the show notes. Whether you're thinking about Aliyah, looking for a home or a haven, or wanting to support the Israeli economy, now is the time to buy it in Israel.